Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and in her new book, Homeward Bound, Why Women Are Embracing the New Domesticity, Emily Matcher examines the phenomenon of women in the home shunning some modern conveniences to take on labor-intensive projects such as baking from scratch, sewing, gardening, and even homeschooling their children. She joins us now to explain what this new approach to homemaking means for gender equality and the role of women in the home and the workplace in 2013. Emily, welcome to WNYC.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So what exactly is new domesticity? Is this different from just stay-at-home moms?
It is. You know, new domesticity is sort of what I define as the re-embrace of old-fashioned or maybe lost domestic stuff, you know, from knitting, which has become very cool, and other kinds of crafting, to home cooking, home baking, all the way through to, you know, people raising chickens in their yards and sort of what's called neo-homesteading. And in that, you see a lot of embraces of, you know, some intense parenting techniques, attachment parenting, homeschooling, and the like. And this is not just women. It's some men, but it is largely a female-led phenomenon.
And I guess it's sincere rather than ironic. I mean, we see feminist reappropriations of burlesque and pinup photography. There was a street fair in Brooklyn the other day where people were selling aprons, but with all these kind of, you know, ironic phrases on it, as, oh, yeah, haha, let's go home and bake from scratch, but then we're going to go to our jobs on Monday.
Well, yeah, well, I think that's part of it. I think, you know, this sort of kitschy re-embrace of sort of old-fashioned, disrespected women's work, like, you know, like knitting or cross-stitching sort of became very cool. The, you know, riot girls and feminists in the late 90s exactly. Sort of brought that back in a sort of kitschy way. And I think that's what helped make it cool and interesting again.
So, women, does this sound like you? Have anybody listening right now found yourselves attracted to the labor-intensive homemaking of your mother or your grandmother? And have you maybe even chosen to make your home your career? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. This year marks the 50th anniversary of Betty Friedan's The Feminine Mystique, which more or less launched the movement to give housewives the option of getting out of the home and, you know, shining a light on how bad it could be in the home. How do women frame this current return to the home as a feminist act?
Well, you know, I think one of the major points that I try to make in the book is that people, men and women, are just really unhappy with the workplace. And this is, you know, partly because of the recession. You know, good jobs are harder to find. But it has a lot to do also with, you know, people having watched their parents work really hard and not necessarily be rewarded in the end, you know, especially with the recession, you know, maybe laid off in their 50s or 60s. And, you know, statistics show that younger people, people in their 20s and 30s, are more likely to define themselves as family-centric than work-centric. Now, that doesn't mean that they don't want to work, but it just means that they're less likely to be willing to make work the center of their lives and more willing to give consideration to domesticity. And women in particular have some dissatisfactions with the workplace that really have to do with, you know, the way the workplace continues to be very unfriendly to people with child-rearing responsibilities, you know, the U.S. being the only developed country with no paid maternity leave mandatory and, you know, really inflexible situations. And people are going, you know what, like, this isn't acceptable.
Let's take a call. Kelly in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Kelly.
Hi there. I was just listening. I'm actually sitting at my desk working. I just went back to work after 5 years of being home with my daughter. And I have a 2.5-year-old boy also. And I think there's a value that was taken away from home life, you know, and there is value in that. And people should be proud of that and providing that. And what you just said about the fact that it's difficult for women in the workplace with children is absolutely true. It's very, very hard.
Kelly, thank you for chiming in.
Yeah, well, thanks for your call, Kelly. And I think you're absolutely right. I think for a very, you know, long time throughout most of history, in fact, what's been considered women's work has been very devalued. And I think now there's a large movement of people to go, you know what, like, just because something's domestic, just because it's in the home, just because it's women's work doesn't mean it doesn't have value. And I think we are starting to see people, you know, really reject that. And in some cases, you know, men go, hey, just because it's women's work doesn't mean, you know, we can't be good at it too.
And Carolita, writing on our comments page, says, I think domesticity is a misleading word. A lot of us women are simply doing things like this because we want things done right, and we don't want to be suckered into spending a lot of money for things we can do ourselves.
Well, you could call it DIY domesticity. I think that's a big part of it, is people going, you know what? Like, we don't want to have to be dependent on corporations so much. You know, we want to be able to make some stuff ourselves. We want to be able to do some stuff ourselves. There's a lot of people that are very worried about, you know, the food system. And so they want to make sure that, you know, that their family is getting the best, safest food. And that's where you see a lot of people, you know, gardening or, you know, baking their own bread because, you know, like you said, they want things done the right way and they don't feel comfortable that, you know, the mainstream system is doing it the right way.
And it seems like every weekend there's a trend piece in the New York Times about someone, usually in Brooklyn, who's either making small batch, you know, pickles or restoring antique bicycles or home distilling gin. So how are men and women doing this as a business different from doing these projects in a domestic setting?
You know, I think it's really interesting, but today we're seeing such a blending of home and work in a really new and interesting way. It's what some sociologists have called the personal career, you know, the idea that rather than go to work for one company, you're going to sort of find your niche, find your talent, and really blend the stuff that you're interested in at home with, you know, with your money making at work. So I think we're seeing a lot of, you know, people trying to make domestic stuff into moneymakers, and that's where you see, I mean, look at Etsy, which has grown, launched in 2005 and has now, you know, grown exponentially every year. And that has a lot to do with people going, you know, hey, I already like to do this stuff. Why shouldn't I make some money? You know, or people going, hey, you know, our great grandmothers, you know, made some extra money selling pies. You know, wouldn't that be cool if we could do that? You know, people want to be able to do something that they enjoy and make some money off it. So that's a really big part of it.
And in some cases, as you say, blogging or crafting can become a career in and of itself. But is this all just a glorified approach to unemployment?
Well, you know, one of the things about this is that I think there's a lot of people that love the idea of making money off, you know, blogging about their domestic lives or their cooking or selling things on Etsy. And they see that there are some people that actually make very good livings off doing these things. Unfortunately, those people are a really tiny minority. So I think there's sort of, you know, there's this idea that it would be really nice and lovely to be able to sort of have your own career doing what you love to do. But in a lot of cases, it just ends up, you know, it does wind up as another way for women to not be unemployed, but to be sort of underemployed.
Emily Matcher with us, author of Homeward Bound, Why Women Are Embracing the New Domesticity, and Max in Bayonne. You're on WNYC. Hi, Max.
Yo, what's up? Love the show.
Thank you.
I'm going to drop some knowledge on you. I just think that a lot of the stuff that's going on today with parenting, you got a couple throwbacks, like all this cloth diapering, this and that. And, you know, it's just kind of like, I want to say upper class or entitled privileged people that are taking poor people habits and putting it on themselves for some sort of self-deprecation. And, I mean, you know, you can do whatever you want to do. I'm cool with that. But I just feel like it's like, oh, yeah, look at me. I'm doing cloth diapering. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, that's great. But these are things that the people that actually have to do that don't want to do that. And people just take these on. So they could go on Facebook and show everybody how hard their lives are, yada, yada, yada. And I'll let you comment on that.
Max, thank you very much.
Well, that is such an interesting comment, Max, and I think there's so much there because we do see that people now are embracing things that, you know, people who have to do them don't want to have to do them all the time. You know, I think cooking from scratch is a lot of fun when, you know, it's something you can do for a hobby or do when you want to. But it's not super fun for people that, you know, have to do it day in, day out, feeding large families. It wasn't super fun for our great-great-grandmothers. And you do see this interesting sort of class flip where things that were once signifiers of wealth, like having, you know, having mass-produced items, are now so cheap that, in fact, the signifier of, you know, of wealth and of good taste is having handmade things because you can afford them or you have the time to make them handmade. So I think there's some really, really interesting class issues at play. Although I would like to point out that I think most of the people that are involved in that stuff would probably be considered, you know, the middle class, people who, you know, can't afford, you know, the nannies and all of the, you know, like organic food delivered and so are doing some of it themselves.
And there was recently a backlash to food journalist Michael Pollan on some feminist blogs who critiqued him as blaming second wave feminists for encouraging women to abandon the kitchen, which ruined how we eat today. You even wrote about this yourself on Salon, we saw, and you said cooking is not fun when it's mandatory.
Indeed, indeed. You know, I think there's a lot of, if you look at the historical record, you know, for hundreds of years, when you look at women's, you know, diaries, you know, cooking was very difficult. Cooking was backbreaking labor. Cooking was carrying water, was making bread by hand and kneading it every day. And, you know, it was drudgery. And I think we're now in the privileged position of, you know, of having cooking be something that can be fun and can be a hobby. And I think a lot of us sort of really romanticize the cooking of a bygone era, which, you know, had some things that were good about it, but we don't recognize that it really was very hard.
Elizabeth and Weehawken, you're on WNYC with Emily Matcher. Hi.
Hi. I think I have a different perspective, having grown up in the South, where crafting was and still is always popular. It never went away. I've knit since I was a child. I taught myself. And I think it's very interesting to talk about it being a women's work, because in the original knitting guilds, women were not admitted. Only men were allowed to knit. And it's really too bad, because after all, you're using two sharp sticks to tie knots. It doesn't get more butch than that. And I think it's just a part of the culture I grew up in, and it is really wonderful to work on something, and it doesn't have to be a privilege. It's just a hobby that you can do in spare time and make something of great and lasting beauty for someone that you love.
Yeah, I think
you know, whether it's an afghan or a sweater or even just a scarf or a hat. Mm-hmm. I participate. There's a knitting store in Baltimore, and the proprietress gets her customers to knit hats, and she gets 500 hats or more for kids in Baltimore that otherwise wouldn't have them.
Yeah.
They're just great things to be done.
Elizabeth, great call. Thank you. So where do men fit in here, especially if the butch act of knitting was once men's work that women weren't allowed to do? I mean, there seems to be, an uptick in stay-at-home dads, but, you know, go to any playground and you'll see how small that uptick is at, 1 o'clock in the afternoon every day. But do we see any men embracing a sort of new domesticity in a particularly male way?
You know, I think one of the things I discovered in my book was that young men in their 20s and 30s are much, much, much more likely to spend time with their children, or much less likely to say that, you know, that they are super ambitious in their workplace ambitions. And you see more men, you know, doing things like cooking. There's statistics on that. You see, you know, more men interested in the DIY movement. Sometimes you see them, you know, doing it in a slightly different way. You see more maybe home brewing or butchery or things that are, you know, more traditionally male. But I think, you know, you make a very good point, and it's true. You know, we talk a lot about, you know, gender equality in the home and, you know, the rise of the new stay-at-home dad. Stay-at-home dads are still only 3% of all stay-at-home parents. So these changes are happening. They're just happening very slowly.
Yeah. I think there are 6 stay-at-home dads in America. They just keep showing up on television. But the book is Homeward Bound, Why Women Are Embracing the New Domesticity. You can read the first chapter embedded on our website. Emily Matcher is the author. Thank you so much for having this important conversation.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And coming up next, a call in for people who have had the Chris Christie lap band surgery. Did it help you lose weight? We'll have an expert here, too, to take your questions. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Stay tuned.